RE@CAOfficial. Ashford is the man, the myth, the fuckboy legend. Carter should watch out for that one. Isabel barely refrained from rubbing her eyes and smudging all the makeup, opting to put the phone away instead and stare out the window until they rolled to a stop at the gatehouse to the Hudson settlement. There were huge mate finder banners at the front of the gatehouse, with streamers strung between them. One of the cameramen leaned his head into the window, letting out a low whistle.
"The officials are excited about this. I heard they're throwing a party for each of the settlements, hoping to get everyone involved. They even brought in alcohol. Don't know what the buggers did to deserve it, though."
"Shut up, Ryan, you racist prick."
Another of the cameramen gave Isabel an apologetic look. She ignored it, and they were soon rolling past the guardhouse. The Hudson settlement was one of the four main city posts, and one of the biggest. There were crowds already forming, held back by spaced-apart bodyguards in black fatigues.
"I had no idea I was this popular," Isabel said softly, following the black rope that was keeping the crowd contained.
"You kidding?"
It was the same cameraman who had snapped at Ryan.
"You could win this thing, and win a life out in the real world for one of these people, too."
Out in the real world. If one of the alphas actually turned out to be her mate, then, well, for the first time in her life, she had to admit, the chances were good that she would be living the life of an icon. The crew exited first, fanning out to capture every moment as she stepped out of the limo. The stylists who dressed her in the plane had explained that each of her outfits had been inspired by the cities she was visiting. For the first stop, she was dressed in a cropped Beastie Boys t-shirt with a slit right down the front, bridged by gold pins. The subtle muscles of her torso brushed in faint gold dust above the hem of loose, high-waisted jeans with large slits down the side seams, showing off the stylish black boots that hugged her calves. Everything was expensive, sponsored by actual designers in exchange for her mentioning their names on camera. Since it was the first question asked by the crew once she was out of the car, she didn't have to worry about remembering to do it. The crowd started screaming as she walked past them, and she tried to smile through the noise, too terrified to make eye contact with anyone. They were holding their hands out over the barrier, but when she moved toward one of them, one of the Ironside crew darted forward.
"Touching is only for the meeting room," he advised quickly. "This way, Miss Carter."
She let them usher her toward the closest building, which had even more people packed behind ropes, filling the sides of the room. She thought she even recognized a few faces from Ironside. There was a table at the other end of the room, two chairs on either side. The crew directed her to the larger, high-backed chair facing the rest of the people, and a hush fell over the crowd as someone called for the first volunteer to come forth. Despite how angry she was at him, her body relaxed as soon as Theodore's tall form stepped into the doorway, the sunlight turning him into a brief silhouette before he was striding for her table.
"Volunteer, eh?"
He sank into the opposite seat, crossing his ankle over his knee and cocking his head at her, brushing a few locks of hair from his face.
"You doing okay, Illy?"
"Why?" she asked, pretending to sound bored. She even pulled her hand up to examine her newly painted nails. A little flop of confusion struck against her chest from his direction. She glanced over his shoulder, spotting a line forming behind him, headed by Moses. Her father and Cooper stepped into the back of the room. She steadied her breath, pulling her chin up as she turned her attention back to Theodore. The weird ball of tension that had taken up residence in the back of her throat was slowly snaking out of her. But was it because Theodore was her mate, or because this was simply how she reacted to him?
"This is quite the Ironside special."
Theodore abruptly changed tack, motioning around the room.
"How exactly do you plan on finding your mate through all the streamers?"
Isabel hated that he was turning on his charm.
I brought one of those special little torches, she answered. Borrowed it off my bond specialist. Shows when someone is wearing contacts. He narrowed his eyes on her, and the confusion flopped against her chest a little heavier.
Liar,
he whispered. Hmph. She forced her eyes to drift over him. Bet I've got nothing on you.
There. There it is. Panic.
Despite his calm, unaffected face, the heavy weight of panic was pressing in against her. She was fucking right. If you had to guess... She notched her elbows onto the table and propped her chin on her hands, leaning toward him. Which settlement would you say my mate was in?
I'd say one wouldn't be enough.
He stood, winking at her, every chink of his armored charm still in place.
You're going to need a small army of them to get through the lines forming.
He chuckled as several people within earshot broke into whispers, a few giggles bursting through the crowd.
Kiss her!
Someone shouted. Theodore laughed harder, holding up his hands as he slowly backed away, leaving Isabel with a horrible, empty feeling inside her chest. Theodore was a phenomenal actor. It was impossible to tell what was real and what wasn't. Moses dropped into the vacated seat, his expression far more curious than it had been while he was standing in line.
Lover's spat?
He asked, reading Theodore better than she ever would have. Something like that? Isabel crossed her arms, dropping her blasé act. How about you, then? Which settlement do you think my mate is hiding in?
What makes you think he's hiding?
So it's a he?
Do I look like an official, Carter?
She leaned over the table, grabbing his collar and putting her lips by his ear.
Worse,
she whispered, her voice barely audible. A low, dangerous sound rose up from his chest, and she uncurled her fingers, dropping back into her chair. They told me to touch the volunteers. She kept the fear from her tone, reminding herself that she had the upper hand. And I know he's hiding. I was inside his head. There, again, the briefest flash of panic.
Again?
Moses asked carefully. So what do you think? Isabel ignored his question. Which settlement is he hiding in?
Oscar dropped a heavy box against the counter, pulling out his phone as it vibrated with a text message. He swiped the screen as a droplet of sweat fell against the glass.
Theodore.
She knows. It was to the group chat.
Motherfucker!
Sato swore. Lily gasped behind him, carrying her own much smaller box.
Oski!
Pretend I didn't say that. He confiscated the box off her, adding it to a pile in the corner. I told you to stop carrying stuff. Go play on your iPad.
How much did it cost?
She asked, shuffling onto the patched-up couch and pulling the iPad back into her lap. He had already preloaded it with endless games. It was free.
He stole it from Ironside.
I won it at Ironside. He bopped her on the nose before opening one of the boxes and beginning to throw utensils into one of the two kitchen drawers. The house was tiny, more like a hut, with one bedroom and a living area big enough for the couch and a tiny trestle table. But the roof wasn't collapsing, like the last one. Lily didn't tell him about it, and he had to rein in his rage that she had been living with rain dripping all over the place for months. His phone vibrated with another message, and his neck pricked as he waited to see how long he could ignore it. 3 spoons and a potato peeler later, he cracked, reaching for the device. Moses. She definitely knows, and she's pissed. Killian.
How pissed?
Moses. She's out for blood.
Oscar.
Oh well, it was going to happen eventually.
Theodore.
Easy for you to say. She already hates you. Oscar. There's a fine line, and I'm the only one who didn't pretend to be your friend, so I guess I've just taken your place as favorite, pretty boy.
Theodore has left the chat.
Moses. Seriously, oh, I'm the one who has to deal with him now.
Elijah.
How can you be sure? Add Theo back.
Theodore has joined the chat.
Theodore has left the chat.
Elijah.
I swear to fucking God. Add him again and tell him Oscar is muted.
Theodore has joined the chat. Oscar has been muted.
Elijah. How can you be sure?
Theodore.
She's my mate. I'm fucking sure.
Moses.
I'm also 100% sure.
Oscar signed out and opened the handy security app Elijah and Gabriel had been working on, cracking Kaylin's password in half a minute. Oscar has been added as an admin. Oscar has been unmuted. Oscar, admin.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Gabriel.
Wow, you're actually enjoying this.
Kian.
It was designed for chaos. He feels right at home.
Oscar has been removed as an admin. Kaylin, admin.
Everybody calm down. We've had time to plan for this.
Killian.
We didn't think it would happen so soon.
Nico.
I'm not ready.
Kian.
I knew today was going to be a shit show.
Gabriel.
Thanks for the heads up.
Easton, admin.
We were never going to be ready, but she's proved she can keep a secret, and I think it's pretty obvious she doesn't want to mate. Maybe we can work something out.
Moses.
She's not in a negotiating mood.
A picture popped up on Oscar's phone, sent by Moses. He picked it up, biting back a chuckle at the image on screen.
Carter was leveling a simmering stare at Moses from across the room, ignoring the poor girl sitting across the table from her, obviously trying to get her attention. Carter looked like she was seconds away from drawing her finger in a line across her throat, threatening Moses for all the cameras to see.
Killian.
Oh my God, she's so cute when she's mad.
Theodore.
She's mad at you, too.
Oski?
The little voice had his head jerking up. Lily's face was green. He quickly hunted down a bucket, pushing it into her hands just as she started to retch, the sandwich he had made her an hour ago resurfacing. He sat beside her, holding her dark curls out of her face until she was finished.
Oski?
She tried again, her face now pale and sweaty.
Will I lose all my hair again?
No, Sprout. This won't be like last time.
Last time? He almost lost her.
And then West turned up, out of nowhere, offering him a way out. Join Ironside. Win. Lily would never have to go through that again. At first, it was just a way to give her a better life after she won her battle against leukemia. But then the cancer came back. They spent every cent beating it the first time around. The second time, they had nothing left.
She managed a tremulous smile, her black-ringed eyes crinkling at the corners. The Sigma ring was almost invisible with how dark her eyes already were.
Will the Sigma come to visit us?
The question had him clamming up, but Lily was too busy reaching for her iPad again. She clicked into YouTube and started scrolling through the trending videos, some of which were clips from the Ironside episodes. She skipped to the reels, tapping to pull up a short video of Carter sitting at the same table Moses had sent a picture of. She was smiling politely at a boy across from her.
She's coming here in 2 days,
Lily said, as Oscar decided to busy himself cleaning out her bucket and fetching her a cup of water to wash her mouth out with. He wrung out a cold cloth, managing to talk her into lying down so he could cover her sweaty forehead. She was still clicking through videos, but she tugged on his pocket before he could return to unpacking the boxes.
Will she?
Lily asked, wide black eyes imploring him. She had developed an unhealthy obsession with Carter in the time that had passed since his last visit.
She watched Ironside religiously in the town hall every night, and followed all the fan pages on her beat-up old brick of a phone. As the only Sigma in the Ozark settlement for a good few generations, she idolized Carter for being like her, and for dragging Oscar into the screen time drama. She somehow thought he and Carter were friends. She might, Oscar hedged. He had to go and see Carter. The gaggle of Ironside assistants and managers that had already turned up to prepare for Carter's arrival had made it clear that he would be the first in line to greet her, just like Theodore and Moses had been. But if she really had figured out what they were hiding from her, then it wasn't a meeting he wanted to involve his sister in.
"I'm not old enough to go to the hall and meet her," Lily pouted, picking at the iPad case. "Do you think she'd have time to come here?"
"I'll ask," he said. She huffed, like she knew he was lying.
"Jackson said I was going to go bald again and I'll be ugly."
"What?"
"Jackson. He said Sigmas are useless, but ugly Sigmas are a waste of air."
"What the actual fuck?" "Where does Jackson live?"
"Row J, House 3. He lives with his grandma. She hates when people lean up against her house. She said she was going to put out pigeon spikes." "What are pigeon spikes?"
"I thought you were starting third grade, Squirt. And you've got an iPad now, too. I'm going to step out for a bit. You better know what pigeon spikes are by the time I get back, and how to remove them."
"Okay, Oski."
He rearranged the cloth, flipping it over to the colder side, and then he stepped outside, his eyes narrowing. Row J, House 3. Could he make the little boy disappear without anyone noticing? Theodore slid into a seat at the rickety table, the weight of his body threatening to collapse it. He had already broken one of them, and he'd only been home for one day. His father was boiling water for shitty tinned coffee, giving him some major side eye. Usually, Moses was the moody one.
"So, it didn't go great then?"
his father ventured, lining up cups and plates of cookies. He always pulled out extras, hoping some of their friends came over when they visited. But they didn't have any friends. Not at home. It was too risky. Especially in the Hudson settlement. Not even their father knew about their ferality. Their mother had taken it upon herself to guard that secret since the day Theodore was born. Luckily, the midwife was late to the birth, or she might have noticed that Theodore was born with spidery black veins that only disappeared when his Sigma mother sucked the darkness into herself. She opted to birth Moses on her own, just in case. And then she decided she couldn't risk another child.
"It was fine."
Theodore fiddled with the cup when his father pushed it into his hand. "She's having a bad day."
"Oh."
Benjamin Kane frowned, darting his eyes to the door, waiting for Moses, or the friends that would never come, or, heck, maybe even Isabel Carter herself.
"I thought I might get to meet her."
"Someday, maybe. Sorry, Dad."
"Your mom would have liked her."
Benjamin flashed a grin full of teeth, some of that Kane charisma flashing across his face. It was a broad and handsome face, his smile just a little crooked, smile lines around his gray eyes, white peppered through the dark strands of hair that were still full and thick despite his age. He wore his beard trimmed short, and he stroked his hand across it now, still staring at the door. Moses stepped through as Theodore drained half of the coffee, drowning out the taste by shoving one of the sugary cookies into his mouth. They sent money home, just like everyone else, but this year the officials had jacked up the prices at all the commissaries. Most households were now lucky to afford half their usual grocery shop.
"She's coming,"
Moses grunted, tucking his phone into his pocket and plucking one of the extra cups from the counter. He snapped it down onto the middle of the table.
"Looks like we'll finally get to use one of these extra cups, eh, Dad?"
Benjamin jumped up, rushing to the door.
What? Oh, she really is coming? Oh, God, is the place clean enough?
He quickly began wiping spilled coffee grinds from the counter.
I should have baked something. She's probably starving.
She flew here on a private jet,
Moses muttered, rolling his eyes.
She probably had caviar for breakfast.
Their father paled even further, staring at the cracked coffee cups.
Dad,
Theodore patted the seat beside him.
Sit.
Relax. She doesn't care.
Well, she cares about something.
Moses shared a look with Theodore, brows pushed high. It said,
Are we really doing this?
It likely wasn't even Isabel's idea. The officials were driving this trip, and any of them would be stupid to assume otherwise. As soon as his father sat down, Theodore sprang up, beginning to pace beside the table.
Did you do something?
Benjamin asked, frowning at him.
Did he mess up?
He directed that to Moses, who smirked.
You could say that. And you?
Benjamin pressed, now just about as white as a sheet.
You could say that,
Moses repeated, sounding chipper. Benjamin let out a sound like a strangled cat.
For crying out loud! The timing! Can't you just apologize?
Might not cut it.
Theodore snapped his lips shut as a knock sounded against the door Moses had closed. Moses remained in his chair, his arms crossed. Benjamin was shell-shocked, staring at the door, listening to the very obvious sounds of a camera crew on the other side. Theodore slipped around the table and pulled the door open, forgetting about the crew instantly. He wanted to say it was because he was used to it, the attention, the cameras, but he would be lying. It was the way Isabel was hunched in the opening, twisting her fingers together like she did when she was scared or nervous. She had put on such a brave face before, but in between then and now, someone had obviously forced her to prolong the encounter, and she had run out of bluster.
So you're going to say goodbye before you leave this time?
Why did he fucking say that?
Her eyes flashed up, mismatched and angry. As always, he focused on the galaxy color she left uncovered. The warm, speckled, honey-gold color made his insides twist up nervously, because it was the color he saw in the mirror whenever he switched out his contacts.
If you'd prefer I didn't...
She began to turn away, but he quickly reached out and grabbed her wrist, dragging her into the house. He stepped up behind her, his hands lightly clasping her shoulders, his body tight against her back.
You're not going anywhere.
Dad, this is my friend, Isabel.
Isabel, this is our dad, Benjamin.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Kane.
Fuck. Her voice was so sweet when she was cowering back against him.
His father was a beta, and Theodore was fairly sure that her issues were mostly with alphas, or Ironside students in general, but she still seemed nervous as all hell.
And I'm Braun Carter.
A voice boomed, a tall shadow falling across the entryway. Isabel flinched, sinking even further into Theodore.
Ah, that explained it.
He gave her a little squeeze, steering her to the other side of the table. Moses stood, angling his body just slightly in front of her as they faced off against Braun. Benjamin had finally found his legs and was enthusiastically pumping Braun's hand.
My wife and I watched you grow up on Ironside, he gushed.
Well, I suppose we grew up with you, but you weren't watching us. It's a pleasure.
Braun glanced around their small house.
Isabel has told me so much about your sons. They seem to be really hitting it off.
Isabel coughed, and he shot her a quick, hard look, making her tense up further. She hadn't told him shit about them. Benjamin flicked his silver-ringed eyes between father and daughter, before stepping back and offering Braun the seat furthest away from where Theodore and Moses weren't even pretending to be doing anything other than guarding Isabel. Benjamin wasn't stupid. He raised 2 alpha sons, even if he didn't know about their ferality. He knew that they could get possessive.
Coffee?
Benjamin asked, just as Braun's eyes began to drift over to Isabel again.
I remember you used to drink quite a bit of it. Actually, I think I might...
He started rustling through the cupboard above the stove, pulling down the brand of coffee he liked best. Braun Carter's face was on the packaging.
I'll make you the special stuff.
He dumped out the old pot and looked over his shoulder.
Theo, come and help your old man out.
There was half a bark to the words, and Theodore set his mouth into a grim line before taking a step back from Isabel and moving to his father's side. Benjamin handed him the coffee packet before moving on to his next target.
Moses, why don't you show Braun and Isabel the rest of the house?
There's only 2 other rooms,
Moses muttered, though he stepped to the side. Isabel followed him and he looked down at her, his brows pushing together before he took her hand and pulled her down the short hallway.
Braun held back, waiting for one of the cameramen to dart after them before he followed.
Were those bruises under her makeup?
Benjamin hissed lowly, leaning into Theodore so the rest of the crew wouldn't be able to overhear.
Theodore gritted his teeth, nodding. It was the last topic of conversation he wanted to broach. He had noticed the second he sat down across the table from her, and it had taken everything in him not to lose his shit. He was still trying to tamp down on his instincts.
From him?
Benjamin whispered, giving up all pretense of coffee-making. Theodore took over so that the crew wouldn't take any interest in their conversation. They were all crowding after Isabel and Moses, completely obsessed with the fact that Moses was holding her hand.
Him, or the other students. Hard to tell with her.
She's limping.
Benjamin's expression was torn. Theodore agreed.
Don't think about it. The last time she was hurt, he turned feral, and she died. He needed to keep a tight wrap on his emotions.
I didn't think Moses liked her.
He likes her well enough. He just doesn't like her liking me.
Benjamin scoffed, the heaviness immediately lifting from his eyes.
You two never did share well.
They were quiet after that. Benjamin didn't understand why his wife suddenly applied for them to relocate to the Hudson settlement, and he understood even less when she began to introduce her sons as twins instead of brothers. But he had learned to let a few things slip. Years of taking on the ferality her sons battled to keep at bay had created a madness inside her, and he loved her too much to ask her to change, especially when she asked for so little. His father didn't question when 8 rare alphas suddenly all came of age to enter Ironside at the exact same time, even though he knew at least one of them was a lie. The outreach settlement they had come from didn't keep birth records, so the only danger now was if he let something slip in front of the cameras. So they didn't speak again until Isabel, Moses, and Braun returned. Isabel sat between Theodore and Moses, her eyes directed to her lap as Benjamin naturally picked up on the safest topic of conversation, Braun Carter. Theodore tuned them out more or less immediately, bending his head toward Isabel's.
You don't want a mate,
he said lowly. She grew eerily still, and Moses pitched closer until their heads were all bent together like they were sharing a secret.
No,
she affirmed quietly.
Then maybe you can understand.
Theodore sat back as Braun shot them a look. He didn't give a fuck about the older alpha, but he didn't want Isabel punished for being rude, and Killian and Oscar had made it clear that not all of Isabel's injuries over the past couple of weeks had been caused by Ironside students. She didn't reply, and it was a physical effort not to pull her back when Braun stood, announcing that they had to stay on schedule.
See you soon,
Theodore muttered, watching her trail her father out of the house. She glanced over her shoulder, looking like she would rather stay with them and their chipped mugs and stale dirt coffee, even though she was probably still fuming at them. He took a step toward her, but Moses gripped his arm, halting him before any of the crew noticed.
"Bye,"
Isabel whispered, turning to follow her father. A growl built up in the back of his throat, but he bit it down, forcing an easy smile as the cameras turned back to watch them standing in the doorway. He leaned against the doorjamb, waving lazily before stepping back and slamming the door.
"Let's go for a run,"
Moses snapped, more of an order than a suggestion. Theodore nodded, storming into their shared bedroom to change his clothes. He needed to work out some aggression, and he needed to do it fast.
Chapter 15. Welcome to the game, I guess. Isabel closed the door to her room, leaning up against it as exhaustion tunneled through her. They had spent most of the day at the Hudson settlement, staying for the beginning of the celebration that night before flying to Maine. Someone had organized rooms for them at a lodge near the North Woods settlement, and she had exactly 6 hours before she had to be up again for the whole hair and makeup routine. She locked the door first, and then put herself through a scorching shower, but she couldn't seem to do anything about the bone-deep chill that had settled into her veins. It had been like that on the plane on her way to New York, and again on the way to Maine. But now it seemed to be worse than ever. She was shivering by the time she stepped out of the shower, pulling on her pajamas and diving into the bed, where she curled into a ball, fighting back a full-body shudder. She managed to drift off to sleep, but when she woke up, her throat was raw, her eyes itching. She told Serena that she was sick when the styling team poured into her room, but the other woman just waved her off with a smile.
"At least the swelling is going down,"
Serena stated cheerfully, already setting up the makeup station.
"So, for the North Woods theme, we have some delicious Balenciaga boots and a Burberry flannel dress with a matching trench. You'll be nice and cozy, and you can hide tissues in the pockets."
Isabel didn't bother answering, because they weren't going to listen to her anyway. She wasn't their client. Her father was. She sank back into the chair, becoming a doll for them to play with as her eyes sought out the window, wondering what the next stop had in store for her. Oscar glanced down at Lily for the fifth time, checking that her cheeks were still flushed with anticipation and not pallid with nausea. She had fallen asleep just before they announced Carter's arrival, messing up the braided hairstyle she had forced him to copy from a TikTok video, but she didn't care. She was trying so hard to stand up on her tiptoes that he eventually gave in and swung her onto his shoulders, pushing his way to the front of the line. People turned to snap at him as he carelessly brushed up against them, but as soon as they saw his face, they scattered. That was how he ended up standing by himself right at the roped boundary the officials had set up. Carter stepped out of a shiny black Jeep, a film crew pouring out of a companion car to capture her walk past the gathered crowd. Lily gripped his hair, hard.
"Oh my God,"
Lily breathed, just as Isabel's eyes swept their way. The Sigma paused, attention flicking back to Oscar. She was dressed in a forest green slip dress, the material practically transparent, with gold foil and beads stitched magically into all the right places. The dress probably cost enough to buy Lily another 5 huts, all with impeccable roofs. But Carter looked like she was freezing. She hugged her arms around her body, allowing the officials to sweep her past the people as she shot them shy, soft smiles. She paused when she got to Oscar, but the officials moved her along again, muttering something about saving everything for the table. She glanced at him over her shoulder, gold dust glinting along her cheeks. They had rolled her in glitter and gold, and it still wasn't enough to cover up her pain. Luckily for her, the damsel in distress posters had already perpetuated the marketable image of a Sigma in need of saving, so she was playing right into their strategy, looking all small and cold.
"She looked at me,"
Lily gasped, finally releasing her death grip on his hair.
She's so pretty.
I've got to go to the meeting hall.
He swung her down, walking her to the edge of the crowd.
Go straight back home, okay? I'll meet you there.
He waited until she was skipping back toward their row before he turned on his heel and stalked into the meeting hall, striding toward the table Carter was seated at. They were standing over her, waiting for her to finish an energy drink. Maybe she wasn't being peppy enough for them.
The first volunteer for the Ozark settlement, some guy announced. Oscar Sato.
He pulled out the seat across the table from her, and they stared at each other for a few moments, neither of them speaking.
Was that your sister?
She eventually asked. He dipped his head in a short nod, before narrowing his eyes as she sniffled, a shudder passing through her small body. He made a disgusted sound, shrugging out of his jacket and tossing it across the table.
They could have at least put you in something warm.
It's freaking hot,
she complained, ignoring his jacket.
She had a fever. Put on the jacket.
He didn't even bother biting back his alpha voice, and she frowned as her limbs moved to obey. Even though a thin bead of sweat had formed on her forehead, she still hugged the jacket close, her nose dipping to the collar. Something raw and urgent rose in his gut as she tried to scent him, and he took a deep breath to steady himself, his lungs filling with the smell of burning cherry trees. It was a new fragrance on her, something he had never smelled before. It was alarming.
When did you last eat?
He asked, his voice rumbling with more gravel than he had intended. She lifted a slender shoulder.
They served breakfast on the plane.
Which you ate?
He stared her down. She pursed her lips, choosing not to answer.
Fuck's sake,
he growled.
Didn't Kian apply to be your surrogate mate? You're getting sick. You won't survive the tour at this rate.
The camera crew crept closer, reminding him that their conversation wasn't private.
Good. Ironside would probably have to act on that.
I've survived long enough at Ironside with no mate in sight.
Her tone was sharp suddenly, her mismatched eyes narrowing in a flash of fury.
Oh, she definitely knew. But did she know about all of them, or just one of them?
Why do you think I won't last 10 more days?
Because you have a fever.
He kept his voice low and even, the opposite of hers.
Maybe the stress of the tour is pushing you over the edge. You need a surrogate.
You need to stop pretending you care.
She stood, still hugging his jacket, still shaking.
I need a break.
She slipped behind the group of people crowded behind her table, ducking away from the camera crew. The group consisted of her father, his team, and a bunch of officials. Oscar made to follow her, but one of the cameramen intercepted him.
Don't bother,
the guy said with a shake of his head. We'll be heading to your house as soon as she's done with the volunteers. They called for the next volunteer, ushering Oscar away, and he gripped the swiftly rising need inside his chest, crushing it in an invisible fist. He wouldn't let his chaos out to play within 100 miles of his sister, and he wouldn't resort to manual chaos by punching the cameraman either. He hoisted himself up onto the scaffolding out the front of the hall, pushing aside the curtain of streamers they had hung up to hide the plastic sheeting where a window should have been. He tugged the sheeting down, leaning into the opening where he had a clear view of Carter. And then he pulled out his phone. Kian let his head fall back against the windowsill, the sounds of Emily and Harper's moans washing over him, with all the soothing texture of a fucking gravel road. I should take up smoking, or drugs, or basically anything to plug the hollow need bottoming out inside him. His dick got hard just like always, but the pleasure was empty and hollow. Boring. That's why the girls were on round 3 without him.
He didn't even want to watch. He just wanted them to finish and fuck off, even though this was their house. He heard them both flop to the mattress, giggling, and he let his eyes drift up to what he could see of the sky above through the window.
"Ashford!"
Harper called out.
"Your phone!"
He dragged himself upright, falling onto the end of the mattress as Harper looped her arms around his neck, dropping the phone into his lap.
"Who's that?"
she asked, as he swiped to open the picture Oscar had sent.
"She's gorgeous. Holy shit, is that Isabel Carter?"
Kian stood, Harper falling back to the bed.
"Pleasure as always, ladies."
"Wait, you're leaving already?"
Emily was reaching for his belt. He took another step back, catching her wrists with a smile. If anyone could have persuaded him to let go for a little while and forget his problems, it was the Turners. They were a no-strings couple who loved inviting the occasional guy into their bedroom. And he happened to enjoy, on occasion, the carefree, joyful way they treated him like one of the battery-operated toys in their bedside table.
"I'll be back tonight," he promised,
dropping a kiss onto Emily's forehead and Harper's cheek. There had been a moment where Harper tossed her head back, her blonde hair cascading to the bed as Emily went down on her. He thought he felt a little twinge of something then, and he was just fucked up enough to know that in the dark and with a lot of alcohol, he might be able to imagine strawberry blonde streaks in that hair. "Actually, never mind. I might just go celibate for a while." The girls chuckled, like they thought he was joking. He was halfway home, still staring at the picture Oscar had sent, when his phone rang.
"Kian Ashford?"
an impatient voice asked as soon as he accepted the call.
"Yes?"
"We are in need of Carter's surrogate mate. Are you available?"
He froze, his brows jumping up.
"I am?"
It came out like more of a question than a statement. His parents weren't going to be happy, but if Carter wasn't in too bad a shape, then they would be back in Chicago in a week or so anyway.
"Is she okay?"
"We'll send a car. Please be ready to leave in half an hour. You'll be meeting her in Colorado."
They hung up, and Kian jogged the rest of the way home, whistling for his brother as he passed the crowded center square, where Logan was hanging with his friends.
"Where's the fire?"
Logan asked, catching up with him.
"Thought you were going out with the Turners tonight."
"I'll explain when we get home. Just keep up." Kian slapped him lightly across the back of the head, kicking up the pace as they neared Archer Avenue. All the narrow lanes in the RRV settlement were named after actual Chicago streets, but none of them were big enough to comfortably drive a car through. They burst through the door of number 11, finding their father and stepmother in the tiny living room. They were better off than most families, even though the commissary prices were jacked up enough that they could barely afford food anymore. Both of his parents had actual jobs within the settlement, and they even had a tiny house with two bedrooms the size of closets and no shared walls with other houses. Kian was pretty sure the money he was sending home was actually going to the neighbors. His Omega parents were like that, kind and generous to a fault.
"Dad, Emma,"
he rushed past them, opening the door to the room he shared with Logan.
"They're sending a car to pick me up,"
he shouted back through the door as he shoved his things into a bag.
"I'll be back when the Matefinder tour comes through here in a week or so."
All three of them appeared in the doorway in a flash.
"What? You're leaving?"
his father asked, sounding appalled.
"You only just got here. You're supposed to be here for the whole break. Your party is tonight."
"Shh, Arthur. Did you even listen to him? He's being added to the Matefinder tour,"
Emma exclaimed, before she turned her excited gaze on Kian.
"Do they think you might be Carter's mate, sweetheart?"
Logan scoffed, flopping down onto the bottom bunk.
"He wishes. They're calling me in as a surrogate. She must not be doing too well."
"Oh."
Emma looked crestfallen.
"That's not good. But why you?"
"I offered, just before the break. Thought something like this might happen." "Thought, or..."
His father trailed off, looking at the tarot cards Kian dropped into his bag before zipping it up.
It wasn't like that.
Kian hooked the bag over his shoulder.
Sorry about the party.
Don't worry about it.
His father clapped him on the back.
We'll just postpone it. Keep us updated, okay? Don't let them force you into anything you aren't willing to do.
Kian flinched, shrugging off the reminder. There were plenty of people who would pay for an hour alone with a young alpha, it turned out. His parents had intervened on more than one occasion.
Love you,
he shot over his shoulder, hurrying out of the house. Isabel was struggling. She managed to make it through all the volunteers in the line with a polite smile on her face, but it dropped too quickly when she rose to shaky feet, following the direction of one of the crew as they assisted her to the exit.
We'll stop in at Sato's house and be wheels up in a couple of hours.
Cooper appeared beside her.
There's a doctor waiting on the plane already.
Thank you, she said, focusing on where she was walking. They had given her the thinnest heel to walk in, and the Ozark settlement only had dirt roads. Cooper dropped his arm around her shoulders, and she immediately ducked out from beneath the weight.
It's not my jacket,
she explained lamely.
Sato is an alpha. He's sensitive to smells. I might not be gifted, but I'm not an idiot.
Cooper was trying to sound good-natured, but it was clear he was annoyed.
It's a 2-hour flight, and then you have the night off. Spend it wisely, because we need you ready to go in the morning. We're doing another 2 stops.
She nodded silently, following the crew to a narrow lane packed with houses no bigger than huts. Sato's door was already hanging open, his broad back visible as he stirred something in a pot over the stove.
Sigma! Carter!
A little girl screamed, racing to the open door. She leaned against it, her chest heaving, her eyes wide. She had a Sigma ring. Sato tensed, but didn't turn around.
Well, hello there.
Isabel knelt down, putting herself on eye level with the girl.
What's your name?
My name is Lily, but Oski calls me Squirt. You can call me Squirt too if you wanna.
She sucked in a breath like the sentence had worn her out, and Isabel noticed the fine sheen of sweat dotting her forehead.
Lily.
Sato glanced over his shoulder, his brows pulling together.
Please sit down.
Lily ignored him, swaying on her feet as she blinked at Isabel.
Did you find your mate?
Not just yet,
Isabel muttered.
I'm so tired after trying to find him all day.
Is there somewhere we can sit down?
Yes!
Lily grabbed her hand, leading her over to the couch that was wedged wall to wall in what looked to be the only living space. Isabel sat down. She could have stretched out her legs to touch Sato in the kitchenette. Lily jumped up onto the couch beside Isabel, her hand clutched around a wet cloth, still staring at Isabel with that dazed, wide-eyed look. There was a bucket pushed just slightly beneath the couch, and a small basket of medications on the trestle table.
I like your home,
Isabel told the little girl.
Do you live here by yourself?
No.
Lily drew out the word, flashing an adorable missing tooth.
I share it with Oski. What's wrong, Oski?
Isabel blinked over at the tensed alpha at the stove. His emotion was radiating out, nudging against her chest with a dark feeling. Lily could feel it too.
Nothing, Squirt.
He slapped down several bowls and then heaped them with what looked like cheesy pasta dotted with peas. He stuck forks into each bowl and brought them over to the couch, dropping one into Lily's lap and one into Isabel's lap before sitting up against the wall, his long legs stretching out. One of them wound behind Isabel's leg, the heat of him brushing across her ankle.
Eat,
he grunted, forgetting his bowl as he fixed Isabel with a hard look.
It's Lily's favorite.
Monster pasta!
Lily stabbed her fork into the bowl, but she made a face when it came time to force the food past her lips.
"Just a little,"
Sato said to her, softening his voice to a gentle, soothing rumble. Lily popped a piece of pasta in her mouth, turning to grin at Isabel.
"He made monster pasta for you. He usually makes me toast when I'm sick."
There were too many medications in that little basket. Isabel wanted to ask, but that dark emotion was still battering against her, and the camera crew were way too quiet, all packed against the other side of the room, some of them still outside. As curious as she was, it would have been wrong to air their private business to the whole world. So she shut up, and she ate. The pasta was surprisingly good, the cheese perfectly melted with a hint of pepper.
"How old are you?"
she asked Lily, who was kicking her legs, tapping against Sato's arm with every swing.
"I'm 8 years old," Lily replied. "Is Oski your mate? You can have my room. I sleep on the couch most nights anyway."
The hut was only big enough for one other room, the walls so thin that she could hear the people moving around in the neighboring hut. Did that mean Lily was completely alone? Sato's father certainly seemed to be dead. Isabel stilled, the fork clattering from her fingers. The horrible ghost who called Sato Little Wolf. He had been this adorable little girl's father? She racked her brain for a response to Lily's question, while Oscar just leaned back against the wall, watching with heavy eyes and offering no help at all.
"My mate will have an eye like this."
She pointed out her multi-hued iris. "Two people forming a bond will always have an eye that matches color."
"Who has an eye that color?"
Lily asked, squinting.
"When you find them, you let me know."
"Okay,"
the girl giggled.
"And if you find them, you'll let me know?"
Isabel lifted her gaze to Sato again. "Do you think it's possible?"
"No," he responded flatly. "Your mate clearly wants to stay hidden. Learn to live with it."
She set her bowl aside.
"I'm fine with that. He better hope I don't find out who he is." "Why?"
Lily asked, licking cheesy sauce off her fork instead of actually eating. Isabel sighed, glancing over to the doorway. She could see her father's shadow outside, Cooper beside him, their eyes burning into her. She wanted to deliver a message. To Sato, to the other alphas, to everybody who watched her tremble today. But she had to be careful, or she would end up in a worse state tonight.
"Because I'm a Carter,"
she settled on, holding her father's gaze.
"My mate is playing games with me. But real icons aren't made to lose. They're going to regret playing games with me."
One of the cameramen stepped forward immediately, his voice loud.
"Are you officially announcing your intentions for the icon track, Miss Carter?"
Her father was smiling wolfishly, a steely look in his eyes. Sato looked like he wanted to drag her outside and punish her somehow.
"I am,"
she stood,
"and I've overstayed my welcome."
She shrugged off Sato's jacket, draping it over Lily's shoulders before she bent to give the girl a hug.
"It was so nice meeting you, Squirt."
Lily choked on a small squeal, returning the hug tightly. Sato stood as the crew all backed out of the house, lowering their cameras. He reached over her shoulder just before she followed, slamming the door and separating her from everyone who had followed her there.
"Lily, the jacket."
He kept his eyes on Isabel, crowding her up against the door. Her back hit the solid surface, Sato's muscled body pushing up against her front. Lily must have handed over the jacket, because Isabel was suddenly wrapped into it again, Sato's hands rubbing over the material.
"This should help,"
he muttered lowly, his cheek brushing against the top of her head. How? Isabel whispered back, her heartbeat thundering.
Because I'm an alpha.
He smirked, easing back.
Same reason they agreed to let Kian be your surrogate. We're fucking potent. We're the perfect bomb for a soul reaching out for something to ground it.
The corner of his lips twitched, dark eyes drifting over Isabel's face.
You haven't figured out who it is.
It was a statement, not a question. And you've known all along, Isabel returned, her words barely more than air. He hummed, the sound vibrating through his chest and into hers.
Welcome to the game, I guess.
Chapter 16. Thoroughly Fucked Up. They checked into another lodge in Colorado, Cooper pulling her aside as they filled the reception area.
Here's the card for your room.
He held it out for her.
We have a surprise for you in there.
Oh, thank you. She took the keycard, wincing when his fingers brushed against hers.
The surprise was probably another dress, just as uncomfortable as the one she was wearing. It smelled bad now, like sweat and sickness. Not even Sato's drugging oleander scent could drown it out.
Isabel was concerned because the outfits were only on loan from the designers who created them, but there wasn't much she could do about it. She was getting sick. Sato's jacket seemed to help, but her body was failing her. Her spine ached, her ribs were on fire, her throat was raw, and her nose was so blocked she could barely breathe. She said goodnight to her father and headed toward her room with a pounding head, all of her thoughts focused on the shower that waited for her. Or a bath, if she was lucky. She entered the room, dropped her bags by the door, flicked the lock over, and leaned her forehead against the wood. She felt fucking lonely. Surrounded by her father and his team, it was like being home again, except this time, her mother was missing. She almost wished she was back at Ironside, having the shit kicked out of her.
Tough day, Carter?
She spun so fast she needed a minute to fight off the wave of dizziness and nausea, but she was pretty sure she wasn't hallucinating the tall boy by the window. Ashford, Kian, resumed drawing the curtains before opening his arms for her. His golden skin looked a little drawn, tension lining his face, though he was wearing a soft smile that looked forced just for her. His hair was pulled into a messy bun, gilded strands teasing his neck. She stepped up to him and slapped him clear across the face. His head turned to the side. It was a little underwhelming. She had imagined him stumbling back against the wall.
I deserve that,
he said tightly. He held out his arms again, and this time she stepped up against his chest, allowing him to wrap them around her while she kept hers swaying by her sides. It felt amazing. His scent was like a salty wave that washed right over her, cleansing her of all the people she had touched, of all the stilted smiles she had labored over. She turned her head, nudging closer, her cheek pressing to his chest. He wasn't soft anywhere, but her eyelids started to droop, her hands twitching to wind around his torso and hang on. Instead, she tucked them into fists and fit them beneath her chin. One of his hands was at her mid-back, just holding her tightly against him while he brushed strong, sure fingers through her hair.
You've had a girlfriend before, she mumbled, swallowing when she realized her mouth was pooling with saliva. You're way too good at that.
I've had a few, and some of them have also had girlfriends at the same time, so maybe they count as double.
She snorted.
I'm so fucking angry at you. I know, sweetheart.
Am I?
She asked.
Are you what?
She pulled back a little,
squinting at him. Your sweetheart.
I don't do girlfriends anymore,
he said, pretending he didn't know what she was really asking. He picked her up suddenly, both arms bound around the small of her back as he hoisted her against him. He kicked into the bathroom, sitting her on the counter. As soon as he stepped away to run the bath, the cold settled back into her bones, making her shiver. She sneezed, and when she spoke, her voice was a rasp.
Who's my mate, Kian?
It was her first real moment to talk to one of them without any people or cameras nearby. Instead of answering, he retrieved a bag of supplies from the other room and began sorting through them. Isabel leaned over, spotting the hot water bottle and medicine inside.
What's that for?
Teek told them to pick it up, along with me.
He dumped half the packet of Epsom salts into the water.
Apparently, Oscar freaked them out by declaring to all the cameras that you weren't going to survive the tour without a surrogate. Teek told them that extra stress would exacerbate your symptoms.
Why won't you tell me who my mate is? You can trust me.
It's not about trusting you.
He sighed, sitting on the side of the tub as the water ran behind him.
Not anymore, at least.
He rubbed his hands over his face.
Have you considered that your mate might not be ready to reveal themselves?
Have you considered that I didn't get that choice?
Would you have acted any differently if you had the choice? You keep a lot of secrets.
She grew quiet, fiddling with her fingers.
That's what I thought,
Kian muttered, standing and pulling his shirt over his head.
What are you doing?
She stared at his sternum, gawking just a little bit. She had seen Kian shirtless more than once, but it was different when there weren't any cameras, and they were only a few feet away in a steam-cloaked hotel bathroom. He had two new tattoos, long-stemmed roses that angled up and over his shoulders. She was also pretty sure his nipple hadn't been pierced the last time she had seen him half-naked. She swallowed, unable to tear her eyes away from him. He tossed his shirt onto the counter beside her, kicking his boots off one at a time.
Teek said skin-on-skin contact was what you needed. She said to stick to you like glue until you stopped shivering.
Isabel quickly sat on her hands to hide the tremble in them.
I'm not shivering anymore.
Relax. Making a move on you is the last thing I want to do. No offense.
None taken?
He laughed, catching the way she scrunched up her nose.
I'm sure you already know you're beautiful.
He grabbed her hips, sliding her off the counter and setting her on her feet. He lifted away Sato's jacket, and then her dress was whipped over her head without much warning.
They're saying you have a scientifically perfect face.
But my mouth is too narrow,
Isabel added, crossing her arms over the skin-toned bodysuit that had come with the dress.
Yeah, I've heard. I've also heard about all my plastic surgery and how it's interfering with the bond magic, so maybe don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Kian chuckled, bending to slip off her shoes. He turned off the water, shucked his pants, and stepped in wearing only a pair of short cotton boxers, his hand held out to her.
Come on, then.
She gave him a dubious look, wondering if it would be weird if she picked up Sato's jacket again.
Probably.
Just pretend I'm Theo.
Kian gave her a taunting look, wriggling his fingers. She scoffed, slapping her hand into his.
Why can't I just be mad at you?
He gently maneuvered her over the rim of the tub and then pulled her down into the water, putting her back to his chest.
There wasn't enough room to squeeze between his thighs, so she ended up on his lap, the tub deep enough for the water to still reach the top of her ribs. Probably because that wounded little soul of yours is desperate for comfort.
He gathered her hair into his hand, using it to tug her head back against his shoulder.
You still aren't relaxing.
Yeah, no shit,
she hissed out, I've never done anything like this before.
Will it help if I tell you to relax again?
There was a hint of laughter in his voice.
This isn't exactly comfortable for me either, you know.
She tried to force her muscles to loosen as his big arms stretched along the sides of the bath. Her phone began vibrating on the counter, and she used it as an excuse to pop out of the bath. Almost immediately, she was freezing again, and she frowned, shivering as she glanced back to Kian. He cocked an eyebrow at her.
Cold?
Yeah. She stepped back into the bath, the water uncomfortably hot until he dragged her back into his lap, his arms wrapping around her middle. She held her phone out of the water, basically melting into his addictive scent. Why am I cold when I'm not touching someone?
Your unfinished bond is straining. They call you the tether, right? Because you're the one that died?
Yeah. She was busy trying to ignore the erection pressing up against her thigh.
Without an anchor, you're just a string between death and life, with nothing holding on to the life side. If you're not careful, you could slip away. Unfinished bonds are especially painful for the tether, and if the anchor is missing, just about any physical contact will do.